It is a beautiful Saturday morning in CCO Land. 71 degrees on our way to 81. Time once again for a wine chat with our friend from Haskell's, Jack Farrell. Hi, Jack. Good morning.
Good morning, Denny. How are you this fine morning?
I am doing well, thank you, and I'm glad to be saying that. I hope you are too, and always fun to hear what you have in mind today. What is your topic today, Jack?
Today I'm going to talk about Oregon wine. Oregon is a relatively newcomer to the world of wine, in spite of the fact there was a vineyard planted there in 1847. But I digress for a minute. We'll talk about Oregon. So many people are discovering the wines of Oregon. It's just amazing to me. And it's the most explosive area of wine growth in the entire world. It's just remarkable what's happened there in a very short period of time. As I said, years and years ago, Oregon was advertised as the land of milk and honey, a great place to come to. The Oregon Trail, William Hill's Railroad, rushed out there and populated the state. But, of course, it fell under the shadow of California, and so Oregon was very slow to develop. And its wine business was very slow to develop. As I said, they had a commercial winery in 1847, just one, and its production was very, very small. And then throughout the whole 1800s, no one paid any attention to it because they thought the area was too cold to produce wines. Well, untrue. Believe me, untrue. Today, Oregon, believe it or not, is the third, it has just nosed out New York as the third most wine-producing state. There's California, the second one is Washington State, and the third is now Oregon, nosing out New York for the third spot in wine production. And just absolutely amazing story, in my opinion, of what's happened there. When I first went to Oregon, was in the early 70s, was my first visit. There were, I think, six wineries in the state. Six. They were doing noteworthy work, etc., but there were only six of them. Today, there are over 1,000 wineries in the state of Oregon, and they're all producing remarkable products. It's just a 180 that you can't believe. You know, like the rest of the country, those few wineries that it had before Prohibition were wiped out entirely, and Oregon was slow to come back, producing a lot of fruit and nuts and things like that, and no interest whatsoever in wine. However, what made the entire world take notice of Oregon was David Lett of Erie Vineyards submitted his wine to an international cultural fair, and it scored in the top five in the world as a Pinot Noir. Well, that got everybody's attention real quickly. And then they developed, of course, this is more about Willamette Valley, but they developed the Oregon Pinot Noir Festival, and people who produced Pinot Noir came from all over the world to look and see what was going on in Oregon and also to show their wares. And these fellows, a lot of winery owners and winemakers, are pretty good businessmen, saw an opportunity to expand. Thus, the tremendous expansion to over 1,000 wineries today from the five that were there in the mid-70s when I first went there. And what a change has occurred. The wines are remarkable, in my opinion. And I'm not the only one that thinks that. The entire wine world thinks that. However, Oregon is very, very heavy to Pinot Noir. Of all the wines they have, they're over three-quarters of the wine, perhaps 80%, is Pinot Noir. Believe it or not, the second most is Pinot Gris, which is another name for Pinot Grigio. But that's only about 20% of the Pinot Noir that's produced. And they're experimenting with Chardonnay, Riesling, and even Cabernet Sauvignon, and lots of other varietals. But really, when we talk about Oregon, we're mainly talking about Pinot Noir. It's 70% of the production, and it's a remarkable thing. I don't think you can talk about Oregon wines without talking a little bit about the Willamette Valley. That, too, when I first went there, their big production was hazelnuts. And that hazelnut stands up and down the highway there, and fruit stands, etc. You had to really search to find any vineyards. But when you found the vineyards, it was like striking gold. All of a sudden, there's these remarkable people producing Pinot Noir that heretofore, California couldn't produce as good a Pinot Noir. Today, of course, they can. But at the time, the Oregon Pinot Noirs just stood out as to be the closest ones to those coming out of Burgundy. And as I say, that was noted by these winemakers as they poured into Oregon to see what was going on there. And that Oregon Pinot Noir Festival was just a terrific thing. In fact, the first time we went there, we had to stay in a school because there was only one small motel in the whole area. The Willamette Valley produces about 80% of the wine of the state of Oregon. So let's talk a little bit about it. That'd be like Napa Valley. If they produced 80%, it would be just a remarkable thing. They're not even close to that in Napa. But in Willamette, they do produce a lot. And it, as I said, it's explosive growth there. Today, there's lots of hotels and motels and fine restaurants, etc. But when I first went there, as I said, you stayed in the schoolroom, no air conditioning. Fans were at a premium. I remember a French friend of mine, a woman friend of mine, Martine, when I was leaving, I gave her my fan. Well, you would think I had given her part of the crown jewel. She was so grateful because her room had the breath of air in it, and I was fortunate enough to have a fan. But the real revelation of that wasn't related to motel rooms. The real revelation of that was the wines that they were producing. And for me, and I never forgot it, was the last night of this conference, a Saturday night, they cooked salmon on cedar saplings over a cedar log fire. And that salmon, paired with any Pinot Noir, was just a marriage made in heaven. In fact, today when people ask me, I always recommend Pinot Noir to have with salmon because it just goes so well. That Pinot Noir, when you think of a Pinot Noir and you think of it with that salmon, with that slight cedar taste to it, it's just absolutely delicious. Anyhow, I digress. That was my wide-eyed moment in Oregon, is to just see that wonderful combination of salmon and Pinot Noir and to see all this enthusiasm for Pinot Noir. I remember going out there with a fellow Minnesotan, Ken Evanstead, and he was looking for a place to plant a vineyard. And Domaine Druon, which is a large Burgundy house, had just bought a huge chunk of land. And Ken thought, well, why bother with a lot of research? The French have already done it. And he bought the property adjacent to it and started Domaine Serene, named after his daughter. And it was just a remarkable endeavor. He really went out on a limb because he spent a lot of money at the time on this vineyard and hired Ken Wright, who was one of the big up-and-coming star winemakers, to make his wine. And he made spectacular wine. And today, Domaine Serene is recognized not only in the United States but the world over as one of the finest Pinot Noirs in the world, and certainly is ranked very high in the lexicon of Pinot Noirs of Oregon. It's very high, and kudos to him. Ken passed away a few years ago, but was a renowned Minnesotan, and that's our influence up there. There's several other Minnesotans who have wineries in Oregon, but his is a showplace today. We're seeing, and it's tended to just beautifully by his wife, Grace, today. And Robert Drouin's daughter, Veronique, is taking care of the Drouin estate in Oregon as well. And as I said, this area, the Willamette Valley, became a magnet for growers from Burgundy, from Chile, from New Zealand, from Australia. They would all come out there to taste and try the Oregon Pinot Noir and then swap hints and tips with one another. And it's just wonderful. And even today, that same Pinot Noir festival goes on. I don't go to it anymore, but I sure would like to, if for no other reason, to have some of that salmon that's smoked, kind of cooked and smoked over a fire, and have it with a glass of good Oregon Pinot Noir. It is just incredible. Now, 80% of the wine of Oregon, as I say, comes from this valley, Willamette, and it's grown like topsy. Today there's fine restaurants there. There are great accommodations, spas, etc. It rivals Napa Valley in the luxury it provides for wine lovers to go there and taste. And they have a great bunch of wine tasting areas in all the wineries up and down the valley. And as I said, the valley is huge. It contains 70% of the population of Oregon. Five largest cities in the state are in the Willamette Valley. So I guess when William Hill's PR people called it the land of milk and honey in the late 1800s, they weren't far off. It really is a remarkable place, and the wines are also remarkable. Another good friend of mine, Wagner's, who's half Kaimas Vineyard, their fourth generation, Joe Wagner, has some Pinot Noir in Oregon called Elowan, and it is an absolutely remarkable Pinot Noir, and very fairly priced, I might add. It really is nice to see third generation, a fourth generation winemaker like the Wagners, and Joe is proudly carrying the Wagner banner with his Copper Cane series up in Oregon and Washington. But Oregon today has all these wineries. It's just imagine from 5 to 1,000 in a short period of time. You know, the mid-70s to today is not that long a period of time. It's, you know, 50 years about, but that's an explosive growth for any industry in 50 years. And for the wine industry, it's absolutely unheard of. So if you have an opportunity to try any Oregon wine, I suggest you do so, because it really is a remarkable area for producing wine. The weather there is kind of considered a cool Mediterranean. It has a little more moisture than the Mediterranean weather, and it's a little bit cooler. It has hot days and cool nights, and Pinot Noir seems to love that, and that's why it flourishes and does so well there. And surprisingly, by today's standards, you can, of course, get very expensive Pinot Noirs. Domaine Serene has one that's in the hundreds of dollars a bottle, but you can get some pretty good Pinot Noirs for under $20 a bottle from Oregon, and you'll be very pleased with the results, even some under 15, that are worth seeking out and trying. They're just delicious, and like I said, they're a wonderful food wine, that Pinot Noir. It's so, you know, it's full of fruit in the nose, rather elegant aftertaste, and as I said, if you really want to try some magic, go to the hardware store, get some cedar planks, make sure they're not the treated cedar planks, raw cedar planks, put them on your grill and throw a side of salmon on top of that plank. What a delicious thing. And then when you couple it with an Oregon Pinot Noir, you have a meal that's made in heaven and really won't disappoint you. So there's a little information for a Saturday morning that you didn't know yesterday about Oregon.
Absolutely. And I remember years ago having other Pinot Noirs from, you know, Haskell's. But then I remember I discovered, I think thanks to you, Jack, and one from Oregon. It knocked my socks off. It was so good. It was almost like it was yesterday. It was several years ago. So I urge folks to really stop in at any one of the Haskell's locations and get some help. They love to help you out. Jack, a lot of locations to get to as well.
Indeed. And don't forget, we have two more of those wonderful Saturday river trips coming up. There's the August one, which is in mid-August, and the September one. They're just fabulous. They're a three-hour trip up the beautiful St. Croix River, and you're tasting hundreds of wines and spirits and ciders and beers, and also having a delicious lunch catered by the wonderful Lowell Inn. It is just a wonderful experience, and I urge anybody to try it. It makes a great gift, incidentally. But you can get information on that from any Haskell store, as well as some wines. We've got our summer BOGO sale that's going on now, and it's incredible. We have over 125 BOGOs. Buy one, get the second one free. And there's sure to be something you'll like. And plenty of Oregon wines in those BOGOs as well. There's the Haskell's in Bloomington, Excelsior, Faribault. Our Maple Grove Super Cellar is not to be missed. We, in Minneapolis, we have free parking on Saturday and Sunday. There's the Haskell's at Ridgedale, Plymouth, St. Paul's, Highland Village, Stillwater, White Bear Lake. Don't forget, if you can't come into Haskell's, go to Haskell's.com, and we do deliver.
Absolutely, Jack. Have a good week. Let's join up forces next week.
You know, Denny, I'm going to look forward to that.
That's Jack Farrell from Haskell's. It is a beautiful Saturday morning in CCO land. 71 degrees on our way to 81. Time once again for a wine chat with our friend from Haskell's, Jack Farrell. Hi, Jack. Good morning.
Good morning, Denny. How are you this fine morning?
I am doing well, thank you, and I'm glad to be saying that. I hope you are too, and always fun to hear what you have in mind today. What is your topic today, Jack?
Today I'm going to talk about Oregon wine. Oregon is a relatively newcomer to the world of wine. In spite of the fact there was a vineyard planted there in 1847. But I digress for a minute. We'll talk about Oregon. So many people are discovering the wines of Oregon. It's just amazing to me. And it's the most explosive area of wine growth in the entire world. It's just remarkable what's happened there in a very short period of time. As I said, years and years ago, Oregon was advertised as the land of milk and honey, a great place to come to. The Oregon Trail, William Hill's Railroad, rushed out there and populated the state. But, of course, it fell under the shadow of California, and so Oregon was very slow to develop. And its wine business was very slow to develop. As I said, they had a commercial winery in 1847, just one, and its production was very, very small. And then throughout the whole 1800s, no one paid any attention to it because they thought the area was too cold to produce wines. Well, untrue. Believe me, untrue. Today, Oregon, believe it or not, is the third, it has just nosed out New York as the third most wine-producing state. There's California, the second one is Washington State, and the third is now Oregon, nosing out New York for the third spot in wine production. And just absolutely amazing story, in my opinion, of what's happened there. When I first went to Oregon, was in the early 70s, was my first visit, there were, I think, six wineries in the state. Six. They were doing noteworthy work, etc., but there were only six of them. Today, there are over 1,000 wineries in the state of Oregon, and they're all producing remarkable products. It's just a 180 that you can't believe. You know, like the rest of the country, those few wineries that it had before Prohibition were wiped out entirely, and Oregon was slow to come back, producing a lot of fruit and nuts and things like that, and no interest whatsoever in wine. However, what made the entire world take notice of Oregon was David Erie, or David Lett of Erie Vineyards, submitted his wine to an international cultural fair, and it scored in the top five in the world as a Pinot Noir. Well, that got everybody's attention real quickly. And then they developed, of course, this is more about Willamette Valley, but they developed the Oregon Pinot Noir Festival, and people who produced Pinot Noir came from all over the world to look and see what was going on in Oregon and also to show their wares. And these fellows, a lot of winery owners and winemakers, are pretty good businessmen, saw an opportunity to expand. Thus, the tremendous expansion to over 1,000 wineries today from the five that were there in the mid-70s when I first went there. And what a change has occurred. The wines are remarkable, in my opinion. And I'm not the only one that thinks that. The entire wine world thinks that. However, Oregon is very, very heavy to Pinot Noir. Of all the wines they have, they're over three-quarters of the wine, perhaps 80%, is Pinot Noir. Believe it or not, the second most is Pinot Gris, which is another name for Pinot Grigio. And there are, but that's only about 20% of the Pinot Noir that's produced. And they're experimenting with Chardonnay, Riesling, and even Cabernet Sauvignon, and lots of other varietals. But really, when we talk about Oregon, we're mainly talking about Pinot Noir. It's 70% of the production, and it's a remarkable thing. I don't think you can talk about Oregon wines without talking a little bit about the Willamette Valley. That, too, when I first went there, their big production was hazelnuts. And that hazelnut stands up and down the highway there, and fruit stands, etc. You had to really search to find any vineyards. But when you found the vineyards, it was like striking gold. All of a sudden, there's these remarkable people producing Pinot Noir that heretofore, California couldn't produce as good a Pinot Noir. Today, of course, they can. But at the time, the Oregon Pinot Noirs just stood out as to be the closest ones to those coming out of Burgundy. And as I say, that was noted by these winemakers as they poured into Oregon to see what was going on there. And that Oregon Pinot Noir Festival was just a terrific thing. In fact, the first time we went there, we had to stay in a school because there was only one small motel in the whole area. Willamette Valley produces about 80% of the wine of the state of Oregon. So let's talk a little bit about it. That'd be like Napa Valley. If they produced 80%, it would be just a remarkable thing. They're not even close to that in Napa. But in Willamette, they do produce a lot, and it, as I said, it's explosive growth there. Today there's lots of hotels and motels and fine restaurants, etc. But when I first went there, as I said, you stayed in the schoolroom, no air conditioning, fans were at a premium. I remember a French friend of mine, a woman friend of mine, Martine, when I was leaving, I gave her my fan. Well, you would think I had given her part of the crown jewel. She was so grateful because her room had the breath of air in it, and I was fortunate enough to have a fan. But the real revelation of that wasn't related to motel rooms. The real revelation of that was the wines that they were producing. And for me, and I never forgot it, was the last night of this conference, a Saturday night, they cooked salmon on cedar saplings over a cedar log fire. And that salmon, paired with any Pinot Noir, was just a marriage made in heaven. In fact, today when people ask me, I always recommend Pinot Noir to have with salmon, because it just goes so well. That Pinot Noir, when you think of a Pinot Noir, and you think of it with that salmon, with that slight cedar taste to it, it's just absolutely delicious. Anyhow, I digress. That was my wide-eyed moment in Oregon, is to just see that wonderful combination of salmon and Pinot Noir, and to see all this enthusiasm for Pinot Noir. I remember going out there with a fellow Minnesotan, Ken Evanstead, and he was looking for a place to plant a vineyard, and Domaine Druon, which is a large Burgundy house, had just bought a huge chunk of land, and Ken thought, well, why bother with a lot of research? The French have already done it, and he bought the property adjacent to it and started Domaine Serene, named after his daughter, and it was just a remarkable endeavor. He really went out on a limb because he spent a lot of money at the time on this vineyard, and hired Ken Wright, who was one of the big up-and-coming star winemakers, to make his wine. And he made spectacular wine, and today Domaine Serene is recognized not only in the United States but the world over as one of the finest Pinot Noirs in the world, and certainly is ranked very high in the lexicon of Pinot Noirs of Oregon. It's very high, and kudos to him. Kevin passed away a few years ago, but was a renowned Minnesotan, and that's our influence up there. There's several other Minnesotans who have wineries in Oregon, but his is a showplace today. We're seeing, and it's tended to just beautifully by his wife, Grace, today. And Robert Druon's daughter, Veronique, is taking care of the Druon estate in Oregon as well. And as I said, this area, the Willamette Valley, became a magnet for growers from Burgundy, from Chile, from New Zealand, from Australia. They would all come out there to taste and try the Oregon Pinot Noir and then swap hints and tips with one another. And it's just wonderful. And even today, that same Pinot Noir festival goes on. I don't go to it anymore, but I sure would like to, if for no other reason, to have some of that salmon that's smoked, kind of cooked and smoked over a fire, and have it with a glass of good Oregon Pinot Noir. It is just incredible. Now, 80% of the wine of Oregon, as I say, comes from this valley, Willamette, and it's grown like topsy. Today there's fine restaurants there. There are great accommodations, spas, etc. It rivals Napa Valley in the luxury it provides for wine lovers to go there and taste. And they have a great bunch of wine tasting areas in all the wineries up and down the valley. And as I said, the valley is huge. It contains 70% of the population of Oregon. Five largest cities in the state are in the Willamette Valley. So I guess when William Hill's PR people called it the land of milk and honey in the late 1800s, they weren't far off. It really is a remarkable place, and the wines are also remarkable. Another good friend of mine, Wagner's, who's half Kaimas Vineyard, their fourth generation, Joe Wagner, has some Pinot Noir in Oregon called Elowan. And it is an absolutely remarkable Pinot Noir, and very fairly priced, I might add. It really is nice to see third generation, a fourth generation winemaker like the Wagners. And Joe is proudly carrying the Wagner banner with his Copper Cane series up in Oregon and Washington. But Oregon today has all these wineries. It's just imagine, from 5 to 1,000 in a short period of time. You know, the mid-70s to today is not that long a period of time. It's, you know, 50 years about, but that's an explosive growth for any industry in 50 years. And for the wine industry, it's absolutely unheard of. So if you have an opportunity to try any Oregon wine, I suggest you do so, because it really is a remarkable area for producing wine. The weather there is kind of considered a cool Mediterranean. It has a little more moisture than the Mediterranean weather, and it's a little bit cooler. It has hot days and cool nights, and Pinot Noir seems to love that, and that's why it flourishes and does so well there. And surprisingly, by today's standards, you can, of course, get very expensive Pinot Noirs. Domaine Serene has one that's in the hundreds of dollars a bottle, but you can get some pretty good Pinot Noirs for under $20 a bottle from Oregon, and you'll be very pleased with the results, even some under 15, that are worth seeking out and trying. They're just delicious, and like I said, they're a wonderful food wine, that Pinot Noir. It's so, you know, it's full of fruit in the nose, rather elegant aftertaste, and as I said, if you really want to try some magic, go to the hardware store, get some cedar planks, make sure they're not the treated cedar planks, raw cedar planks, put them on your grill and throw a side of salmon on top of that plank. What a delicious thing. And then when you couple it with an Oregon Pinot Noir, you have a meal that's made in heaven and really won't disappoint you. So there's a little information for a Saturday morning that you didn't know yesterday about Oregon.
Absolutely. And I remember years ago having other Pinot Noirs from, you know, Haskell's. But then I remember I discovered, I think thanks to you, Jack, and one from Oregon. It knocked my socks off. It was so good. It was almost like it was yesterday. It was several years ago. So I urge folks to really stop in at any one of the Haskell's locations and get some help. They love to help you out. Jack, a lot of locations to get to as well.
Indeed. And don't forget, we have two more of those wonderful Saturday river trips coming up. There's the August one, which is in mid-August, and the September one. They're just fabulous. They're a three-hour trip up the beautiful St. Croix River, and you're tasting hundreds of wines and spirits and ciders and beers, and also having a delicious lunch catered by the wonderful Lowell Inn. It is just a wonderful experience, and I urge anybody to try it. It makes a great gift, incidentally. But you can get information on that from any Haskell store, as well as some wines. We've got our summer BOGO sale that's going on now, and it's incredible. We have over 125 BOGOs. Buy one, get the second one free. And there's sure to be something you'll like. And plenty of Oregon wines in those BOGOs as well. There's the Haskell's in Bloomington, Excelsior, Faribault. Our Maple Grove Super Cellar is not to be missed. We, in Minneapolis, we have free parking on Saturday and Sunday. There's the Haskell's at Ridgedale, Plymouth, St. Paul's, Highland Village, Stillwater, White Bear Lake. Don't forget, if you can't come into Haskell's, go to Haskell's.com, and we do deliver.
Absolutely, Jack. Have a good week. Let's join up the forces next week.
You know, Denny, I'm going to look forward to that.
That's Jack Farrell from Haskell's.